Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. A reminder to you all, on Monday, we will air our Get Lit with All of It book club event with Louise Erdrich, author of The Night Watchman, as well as artist and activist Buffy St. Marie. As you know, the New York Public Library is our partner for Get Lit. So for this hour, we are taking a look at the library's list of the best books of 2020. And being the book nerds we are, we have interviews with many, many, many of the authors listed. So today we'll hear a few of those conversations. Earlier this year, New York Times book critic Parul Segal wrote about poet Dinez Smith, "I'd like to invent or order up new adjectives to describe the startling originality and ambition of Smith's work. I can only yoke together antonyms to convey anything of their particular vibration, their joy-dread, hunger-contentment, holy profanity." Dinez Smith is part of a wave of writers confronting issues of race and sexuality in modern and inventive forms, often with great intimacy and sometimes with humor. Smith, who uses the pronouns they and them, won the Kate Tufts Discovery Award and the Lambda Literary Award for Gay Poetry for their debut collection, Insert Boy, in 2014. Their follow-up, Don't Call Us Dead, was a finalist for the National Book Award in 2017 and won the Ford Prize for Best Collection, making them the youngest recipient of the award in its history. Smith's third collection, Homie, is a celebration of friendship with all its personal and political shadings. I started off by asking them, when did you first know you wanted to be a poet?
Oh, God. I still don't know if I want to. I just am. I started writing in high school, and I was very lucky that nobody in my life and in my family told me that loving poetry and doing things that required poetry to take up my time was unworthy. And so it wasn't until, I guess, my early 20s where I really started to ask questions like, okay, how do poets eat? And like, you know, how do they pay rent? And like slowly but surely started to piece together that it was possible. And so I guess I was always a poet and I just said yes to it eventually. Yeah.
You know, you originally from St. Paul, Minnesota, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So your high school, I just sort of like went on a little Google rabbit hole.
It's a good high school.
Gordon Parks went to your high school.
Charles Schulz
went to your high school. I mean, was that a place where you were able to really explore? It sounds like it might have been some people say, oh, in high school I had to turn to poetry to escape.
No, I was pretty popular. I was prom king and all that kind of stuff, which is weird. But yeah, I think my high school was great. I got the privilege to work with Jan Mandel, who is a legend in Minnesota, mm-hmm. for all of the artists and activists that have walked out of her classroom. And so I had this, you know, this amazing force in my life of a teacher who was telling us that our voices mattered and that we could have an impact on our communities and that there was real value in art, that it wasn't something fluffy or it wasn't just for entertainment, but that it was a force of change, both in the world and in our lives. And I totally bought into it. And so, yeah, so very thankful that Central High School and the work that they've been doing for decades with the arts was something I got to just walk into so easy. It made being an artist so easy, never frivolous and always ferocious as a thing to be. Yeah.
When did you realize that you know, you heard that poetry could be mm-hmm. a tool for social change or be a social awakening for a reader? When did you really experience it, either yourself or someone who has told you that about your work for them?
I think I felt it off the bat. I mean, I guess when I say I got into poetry as a kid, it was because Jan, what she did was bring alive poets to us. I didn't know poets were living. I thought it was like Emily Dickinson and Robert Frost and Langston Hughes if it was February. And Jan was the first person to like bring us poems about our world and our lives into the classroom. I had never, you know, teachers were like, here's old war poems. Think about what this means to our days. And Jan was like, no, here's somebody talking about 9/11. Mm-hmm. Here's somebody talking about the war in Iraq. What do you think about this? And so from that age, I was just like, wow, I didn't know poets were alive, but two, that we could speak to our contemporary matters, that it didn't have to be about trees and feelings, but it could be about the real pulsing things that we were living through every day. And so I've always believed in that. And, you know, every time I get my favorite moments when I'm out there touring and stuff like that are when people come to me and say, oh, I didn't know poems could sound like that. I didn't know poems could sound like me. I didn't know poems could be about, you know, everything both grand and minute in my life. And when they see themselves or their lives in my work, that is what I guess I hope for, is that people will know that poetry can be urgent and also, I guess, just a home for them in whatever story they have to tell. So.
I was thinking about this because yesterday would have been Trayvon Martin's 25th birthday. Mm-hmm. And in your poem, Summer Somewhere, it's a really beautiful poem, and it's a really sad poem at the same time. Are you someone who, when something happens in the world, do you go in and immediately write about it, or does it sort of live in your brain and then one day the poetry part of it just comes out?
Sometimes. I think poetry is a reflex for me when I'm thinking about something very difficult. So there are times when I let it boil for a little bit, and then eventually I'll say, like, okay, I think this is, and, you know, and also I think, like, putting your body in the streets is also, like, worthwhile too. You know, I don't want to say that, like, poems are the end all be all. But sometimes, you know, very quickly or sometimes a little slower, it will come to me and say, oh, this is a poem. This is something that I think I can add hopefully some useful words towards, either for myself or for a feeling that I feel hovering throughout the community. But there are other times when, you know, I don't think it's my job. You know, sometimes I think about the poem and I say there's somebody else that's out there that's telling the story better. And I think that's the job of the poet, not only to like sit with it and write after a while, or to like just like run to the page urgently, because sometimes we need that as well, but also to amplify the voices of other folks. So I think, you know, whenever it sits with me for too long, I start to ask that question of like, who else is already speaking to this that I can go ahead and amplify them instead of needing it selfishly to be my own poem? Yeah.
My guest is Denez Smith. Their new release is called Homie. I do want to ask you about, you know, we had someone on a couple weeks ago talking about the early days of writing, and and we were talking about the debate between MFA and not MFA. Mm-hmm. And you chose not MFA.
I did. I did an MFA. I just dropped out. Oh. So I said yes,
so
MFA,
right,
and then I
said
not.
Right up in the middle.
MFA,
okay, yeah. So why was dropping out?
You know, we don't really need to get into it too long. But it was just mental health, you know. And I think for me, the MFA, once I got there, you know, I am very thankful to the MFA program that I went to for everything that I did glean from there before I left out. But I think what I realized was that, oh, I already have all the things that an MFA has to offer, which is I have a community of writers that I am blessed to have and grow with and talk to. I have sort of a like general handle on like how publishing happens. And there really is no like magical formula to that. But, you know, you just kind of figure out how it works. And I had a drive to write. I didn't question if I was a writer by then. And so I think that's what the MFA offers a lot of folks. A lot of times it's really just like having resources, having somebody pay you for like 2 years to sit down and write your book. Wonderful. But if you already have, like, that's what I grew up in spoken word and poetry slams. And,
yes.
And to me, that was very much like a long informal MFA. I was around these super talented writers and we were all pushing each other and trying to, you know, kind of one up each other. And that's the beautiful part of the competition, is that you actually like do want to show back up to the slam and say, Franny Choi was very good last week. And I want to write a poem that's like slightly better than her. And so, yeah, we were pushing each other. We were learning from each other. We were sharing what we were writing. And that was the MFA for me, you know, just like being in these bars and coffee shops and rooms with poets and just like doing poems for the sake of loving them. That was where my education happened. And I'm ever grateful to those communities.
It's your education. What did you learn? What did you learn?
What did I learn? That poetry, I think more than any other genre, defies definition. And I am so grateful for like folks like Douglas Kearney or Shir Ehrlichman, or, you know, there's all these poets I think that are always like stepping up to the genre and saying screw it and making something completely new. And so I think that's what I learned about poetry, is that it's ever evolving. It is sort of unpindownable. Is that a word? No, today it is.
Yeah.
That there is like legit room for everybody. I think there's like this long idea that like there is a particular kind of poetry or a particular kind of person that loves or works for poetry, but that's not true. When you go to a poetry slam, you see everybody in the room, both in the audience and on the stage. And just that great tapestry of folks was just so marvelous to grow up and be a part in, because to me, poetry just feels so boundless and yet so possible, and that we can do these useful earthly things with it as well, when it is this like thing that I think is older than humans, right? It's like, it's song. It is the first song. It is the first prayer. You know, that is poems. They're these witchy little things that we get to tap into. And that's what I learned from, you know, the Poetry Slam, was that it wasn't some highfalutin thing that you needed a degree to understand, but that poetry is as instinctual to us as breath and as prayer and as hope. And, you know, yeah, I'm thankful for Poetry Slams for not putting borders or putting institutional walls around that experience of poetry.
My guest is Denez Smith. We're talking about their new book, Homie. Could I get you to read from Homie?
I would love to read from Homie.
Thank you.
Which poem do you want to hear?
We're public radio, so certain words.
I will not cuss.
maybe the first poem?
Yeah, sure. I don't think there's curse words in here, and if not, I will change them on the fly. All right, this poem is called My President. Today, I elect Jonathan, 11 and already making roads out of water. Young genius, blog writer, little community activist, curls tight as pinky swears, black as my nation. I trust the world in his tender, blooming hands. I trust him to tell us which rivers are safe to drink and which hold fish like a promise. And I elect Eve Ewing, who I know would misfrizzle the country into one big classroom where grandmas finger paint the national budget and uncles stand around smoking blacks, plotting on stars for our escape. She could walk to the podium at her inauguration and say, the future is now, and we'd all marvel at the sun and moon looping the sky like a GIF, it's pronounced GIF, folks, as the cars all learned to fly and our skin grew bulletproof. And Colin Kaepernick is my president, who kneels on the air, bent towards a branch, throwing apples down to the children and vets. And Rihanna is my president, walking out of global summits with wine glass still in hand, our taxes returned in gold to dust our faces into coins. And my mama is my president, her grace stunts on amazing brown hands, breaking brown bread over mouths of the hungry until there are none unfed. And my grandma is my president, and her cabinet is her cabinet, because she knows to trust what the pan knows, how the skillet wins the war. And the man I saw high kicking his way down the river, he is my president. And the trans girl making songs in her closet, spinning the dark into a booming dress, she too is my president. And Shonda Rhimes is my president, and Nate Marshall is my president, and Trina is my president, and the boys outside Walgreens selling candy for a possibly fictional basketball team are my presidents. And the bus driver who stops after you yell, wait, only twice is my prez. And dude at the pizza spot who will give you a free slice if you are down to wait for him to finish the day's fourth prayer is my president. And my auntie, only a few months clean but clean, she is my president. And the neighbor who holds the door open when my arms are full of laundry is my president. And every head nod is my president. And every child singing summer with a red sweet tongue is my president. And the birds and the cooks and the single moms especially, and the weed dealers and the teachers and the meter maids who let you slide, and the cab drivers who stop, and the nurses' swollen feet, and the braiders' exhausted hands, and the bartender and Beyonce and all her kids, and the rabbi and the sad girls and the leather daddy who always stops to say good morning, and the boy crying on the train, and the sudden abuela who rubs his back, and the uncle who offers him water, and the drag queen who begins to hum, oh, my presidents, my presidents, my presidents, my presidents, show me to our nation. My only border is my body. I sing your names, your names, my mighty anthem.
I want to give you
aw, thank you.
That was my conversation with Denez Smith. Their poetry collection, Homie, was selected by the New York Public Library as one of the best books of 2020. Up next, Hillary Leichter talks about her debut novel, Temporary, which paints a picture of the gig economy as it follows its narrator through 23 different jobs, from a shoeshine stand to a pirate ship.